This is Red, Chapter 9, Make Camp. They left before first sun, when Red was at its coldest. Hikaru, Ben, and two other Zulus had brought several red boar with traverses carrying tents and scant provisions for their short journey. Before dawn, they would reach the Chekhov homestead and the rest of the Azanites tasked with trading and form a convoy to the East Marshes. Spock wrapped himself in several layers, but still accepted the woolen scarf and hat to wear on top of his Starfleet-issued clothing. They walked slowly behind the boars, Jim walking shoulder to shoulder with him in the dark pre-morning silence, until the lights ahead signaled that they had joined the rest of the convoy on the far eastern corner of Chekhov land. Several of the older children were joining the trading activities, laden with empty packs and lanterns. A few of them were Spock's students, who hailed him with an excited, "Hello, teacher," before running up and down the convoy to find their friends. They walked for hours, only stopping once midday for the boars to drink and for a quick meal. McCoy dug into a leather bag to pull out several squash and mushroom hand pies, still warm from the hot red rock stones wrapped in flannel at the bottom of the bag. A flask of red grain and another of steaming tea was passed around. Spock drank from both without comment. It was several hours more until they reached their destination. The barren salt marshes, with burnished water and glassy soil, were transformed in the winter. The water dissipated into the southern sea, leaving nothing but shiny opalescent ground, like untouched snow. The children of Red had no memories of snow, as what little precipitation fell on this part of Red never became snow, rather hail and rain. Still, they delighted in the dry marshes, running and making lines in the salt, creating piles and drifts of it with their feet, before the adults could divvy out the tasks to set up camp. "Tomorrow this will be filled with ships," Jim explained as they carried crates and bags to where they would sleep for the night, eager to set up before the early dusk light waned. "Mostly runabouts and the tiniest of freighters." "As well as one Starfleet vessel," McCoy announced. "The USS Chatelet will be sending down Captain Pike." Jim stopped, a thunderstorm upon his face. "Pike." McCoy nodded. "That was the message we got." He set down the bag containing the tents on the edge of the marsh, seemingly unaware of the storm within Jim's mind. "This looks like a good spot. You set up," and left them to assist the families behind them. Jim worked quickly without comment, the tension upon the mention of Pike still thick in the air. "Do you know Pike?" Jim asked, finally breaking the silence. Spock nodded. "I have served with him, and was a student in his command class at the academy. Do you know him?" Jim didn't comment, just shrugged and fixed another one-person tent, leaving Spock to his suspicions. Slowly, a small city of tents popped up, much as the harvest celebration, with fires of red rock being lit and meals being brought out to share. The red boars were penned in a salt field with bags of grain, and the youths of the procession were sent to get water that had to be desalinated by the bucketful for the entire camp. When Spock and Jim had set up the tents, they made their way to a space in the center McCoy had kept clear, a communal area of sorts, where a few had started to play on pipes. As Spock followed Jim through the crowd, he was surprised to be greeted warmly by so many, mostly families of the students he taught.
"Good fortune for such warm weather, don't you think, teacher?"
"Teacher, good fortune after such a journey. Won't you share in some red grain?"
"You've gotten popular," Jim observed quietly, accepting the draft of red grain from Spock's hand and taking a hearty swig.
"Teacher," a reedy voice called. "I thought it was you,"
the community's elder Beta declared, leaning on her walking stick.
"I have heard nothing but praise for the work you have provided our community."
Spock bowed his head, aware her eyes were darting between himself and Jim thoughtfully.
"We are indeed grateful to have our young people benefit from your presence," she said, causing Jim to stand a little straighter. "I have also heard other things as well, but gossip is idle. she intones solemnly. Will you be sitting with young Jim tonight?
Jim froze, eyes wide.
Yes, Spock agreed.
Ah, I see,
Beta said brightly, nodding. Good fortune to you, then.
Spock allowed Jim to herd him through the main throng of people to a more quiet spot.
I'm sorry, Jim said, but his sly smirk said the opposite. I should have warned you. Declaring to sit next to me, that's about as official as it gets. You're smitten with me.
I was aware of the cultural implication, he admitted.
Oh? You are not the only one who speaks to Ben Sulu about your courtship plans.
It startled a laugh out of Jim, who found a chest serving as a bench near the fire. There they sat together, the first time in public. Spock caught a variety of gazes as he listened to the music and stories, able to discern a mix of curiosity, approval, and criticism. Jim simply tucked his arm around him.
Brazen as you please, one voice muttered,
and ignored them all. When the crowd died down, they took time to walk around the campsite. Several other couples were taking advantage of the allowed freedom of socializing within eyesight of the community. When Spock admitted how unused he was to such weather, Jim grabbed his hands and started to breathe onto them, his breath hot and wet, lips brushing against sensitive fingers, the sensation almost too much to bear. Spock swallowed tightly, but did not say a word. The spark in Jim's eyes said that he was now aware as to the daring nature of his act. Spock took Jim to check on the boars and snuck into the grass to spend minutes kissing, and Jim attempted to try, and failed, to figure out the buttons on Spock's Starfleet-issued shirt. Spock's fingers had gone numb again in the cold of night, or he would have assisted himself, but nonetheless enjoyed swallowing Jim's frustrated groans and good-humored growls between more kisses. They meandered back before one of the children could happen upon them, finding their little trio of tents still deserted, McCoy likely still visiting with other families. Jim drew two shallow cargo containers closer to the small pile of hot red rock to enjoy the ambient heat and company for a little while longer.
You asked about Captain Pike, Jim said suddenly.
I didn't answer. I don't want there to be secrets between us, but I was surprised that he reached out of the blue to send Bones a message.
I also received a message from Captain Pike, Spock admitted, unwilling to let a technicality become a lie of omission between them. I had inquired about a particular file, which alerted Starfleet, which is why I believe Captain Pike is coming to Red.
You inquired into Starfleet about me?
Jim asked, the hurt plain in his voice.
No, Spock denied. I wanted access into my own academic records.
Confusion colored Jim's brow, while Spock reached for a pad inside his personal satchel and brought up a file and handed it to Jim.
This was my final thesis upon graduating from the academy.
Jim looked at the mundane title and skimmed a few paragraphs.
You did your thesis on my dad?
Spock nodded, uneasy and unsure of Jim's reaction. I researched George Kirk and analyzed the battle, the command decisions that led to the crew and you escaping. I did not research beyond the boundaries of the restrictions on your or your family's data files. I erroneously assumed it was to protect your privacy, to shield you from the fame of being George Kirk's son.
Jim shook his head. Mom sent me to Tarsus to give me time, I think. I was an angry kid even before I got there. And then,
Jim paused, remembering.
Pike was a security officer on the Quixote, the ship that rescued us. He was there to tell me Mom died rescuing me. I told him I wanted to disappear. I wanted to find a corner of the universe that didn't know Tarsus or the Kirks or Klingons or anything. So Pike found Red.
Spock was silent, allowing Jim to gather his thoughts, obviously reliving memories long buried.
I don't know what he did exactly, but it was all arranged. He talked to Enid, the colony founder, made her build the school. He convinced Bones to take us in.
One day we were quarantined on a space station. The next day we were on a shuttle for the edge of nowhere. Jim smiled sadly. I hated him.
Pike?
I hated Pike for living when my mom wasn't. I hated everyone, actually. But Bones, I hated him the most. I tried to sabotage everything he made us do. I purposely broke our tractor about 20 different ways, and he would make me fix it every time. He wore me down with Azonite proverbs and work, and when I was worn out from yelling and fighting, he made me talk. Every damn day, the work and the talk, until it was a pattern, and I realized that Bones wasn't leaving. He wasn't leaving me alone, and he wasn't leaving me. He wore me down until I realized he wasn't trying to wear me down. He was building me up. Spock sat silently, more grateful than ever for the doctor's presence. I worry about him, Jim confided. He was alone before he took us all in, and not in a great place after his wife left. I can't live my life worrying about what he will do without me, if I... Well, the future, you know. You are the last bird to leave the nest, Spock said, remembering a phrase his mother said frequently when Spock was preparing to enter adulthood. Jim smiled sadly. So you see why it's so hard. It would hurt him. I can't ask him for anything more. Bones spent 10 years raising all these messed up kids he didn't ask for.
And I'd do it again, a gruff voice said.
Jim turned, not visibly surprised that the man was listening to his confession. McCoy placed a hand on Jim's shoulder and shook it, growling fondly. Shut up, kid. He held it there a moment more before Jim looked up and pulled the doctor into a hug, earning him a surprised yelp. When he regained his composure, he leaned in and whispered something in Jim's ear. Jim visibly relaxed and sat down, more contemplative when the doctor started walking to his tent.
I'm going to bed, McCoy announced. I expect you two to be as well. I'm keeping both ears open while I sleep, he warned.
Jim and Spock watched the red rock glow for minutes more in silence, the camp now the quietest of murmurs. Are you well, Jim? Spock asked when they could hear the soft snores of McCoy. Jim smiled genuinely, his face lighter. Yeah, we're good. End of chapter 9. Author's note. Just one more chapter, I think. Dear readers. This is Red, Chapter 10, Waiting Until Spring. The Azonites had placed their order for most items 6 months in advance, during the last trading day. Parts to harvest machines, raw materials to make clothes and nails, medicines, supplies for a possibly harsh winter, with no guarantee that a ship would be nearby to notice a distress signal if something went wrong. With surprising efficiency, the ships landed and the salt marshes turned into an exotic bazaar. Books, the paper-bound kind, were hauled off in boxes and lined up for families to peruse, alongside bottles of home remedies, exotic herbs, and protein supplements. Pneumatic doors of smaller cargo ships opened to display tablewares, cloth, a veritable display of home goods laid out. Merchants hawked their goods and greeted repeat customers. Beta perched on a large rock, handing out letters to families.
Jim, one from your brother, she said, waving a piece of real paper.
Jim accepted it, tearing it open to find several letters tucked inside, as well as a small holo display. Jim turned it on to reveal a trio of humans, a man who looked a good deal like Jim, a woman, and a baby.
I'm an uncle, Jim announced to McCoy and Spock. They're calling him Peter, and there's another one on the way already.
The doctor declared he needed to escort Zipporah Sulu to collect the lenses he had ordered, leaving Jim and Spock to explore on their own. "Rare jewels," one man called out, displaying a box of something very nice for a special someone, eh? Jim declined and turned on his heel, obviously looking for something specific. However, one caught Spock's attention.
"Ah, a Vulcan with a keen eye," the merchant said. "Demotite. Very rare, very valuable."
"Not so rare," Spock commented, knowing the stone's qualities very well.
"I won't argue with a Vulcan," the man replied.
Jim stopped, looking sidelong at Spock.
"Its dysdiachus triacontahedron quality makes it valuable in many energy-conducting processes. I thought you might find it valuable to experiment with your metalworking devices."
Jim smiled and shook his head. "You don't need to do that," making the merchant frown. "The metalworking iron was a courtship gift, was it not?" Spock questioned. Jim frowned. "Yes, but there's no reason why..." Spock passed his credit chip to the merchant. "Courtship gestures, as viewed by evolutionary biology, are thought to provide one of the most primitive purposes of mating, allowing a partner to prove their worthiness as a mate. However, I believe there is value in the symbolic meaning, a way for the gift-giver to associate traits, perhaps not easily explored in the confines of a courtship."
"So you're saying that gift-giving is logical?" Spock nodded.
"Under certain circumstances, it is both an efficient and productive means to an end." Jim looked at him, uncertainty coloring his brow. "Also," Spock added, voice lowering, "I wish to give it to you." Jim blushed a little, giving in graciously. Spock accepted the velvet bag from the merchant, informing Jim he would bestow it at a more appropriate time, which Jim immediately deemed illogical.
"I strongly disagree," Spock objected.
"Where is your evidence?" he teased.
"You will simply have to wait."
"Jim!" Bensulu called out. "Spock! Jim!" Jim looked over the heads of the crowd to see Ben and Hikaru on the edge of the crowd near a shuttle with the Starfleet insignia. Jim ducked and wove until they both arrived, the two men beaming from ear to ear.
"Meet our daughter," Ben declared, touching the glass where a human fetus was curled in the meter-high tank, glowing amber and pink.
"Congratulations," Jim offered. Spock noticed more than one tank was ready and waiting outside, and one of the couples from the Harvest Festival offering their genetic material to a nurse.
"When's the due date?"
"Officially, 2 weeks," Hikaru replied. "Dr. McCoy said it would be safer to get home and have her, but they offered to decant her now. But we can't risk..." Hikaru stopped, looking where his family waited, one among them being his sister Juniper, still grieving her own child.
"These are the vaccinations she'll need a few weeks after the birth," the medical staff member said, handing them a pad.
Hikaru looked at it, genuinely puzzled, but Ben accepted the list and glanced over it.
"Thank you kindly, but we will decline."
"Decline?" the nurse replied, puzzled.
"She's been receiving a series of vaccinations and supplements in fabricated utero as part of the incubation series thus far. Why decline the last round?"
Ben smiled tightly and handed back the pad without comment.
"They'll accept the tech that made the baby, but not the vaccines to keep her alive," the nurse muttered angrily,
unaware or uncaring of the Azonites who overheard.
"It's just how they do things here," Jim muttered, mostly for Spock's benefit.
"Just the two I was looking for," a voice said behind their shoulders. "Jim, Lieutenant Spock, a pleasure to see you both."
Jim blinked hard, his mouth pressed into a firm line.
"Do you have business here, Captain?"
The man gestured to the Starfleet runabout with some irony.
"Step into my office."
Spock was relieved when Jim looked back and asked, "Come with me?" Pike's eyes narrowed, but he didn't comment when Spock followed them into the tiny runabout, standing behind Jim's chair.
"You're looking well," Pike commented idly.
Has it really been 6 years since we last spoke?
Another Azanite day of trade, right?
Checking up on me?
Spock's field notes are consistently cursory and clinical when it comes to his hosts. I admit I was intrigued by what little he did write, and looked up your file. Your aptitude tests were off the charts. Which was apparently the wrong thing to say. Jim's body posture straightened to his full height, a line of anger perceptible to those who knew him.
I survived Tarsis, didn't I? Jim replied calmly.
Those scores were the only thing that kept me on this side of the dirt when the governor started slaughtering colonists, if you remember. I haven't forgotten. I have a hard time believing you survived all that shit to lead a less-than-ordinary life.
Maybe I love it.
You telling me or asking me? Jim didn't respond. Pike leaned forward, unflinching. Jim, you're 22 years old and apparently no closer to choosing your way than the last time we spoke. If I thought for a second you wanted to stay here, I'd leave you alone to live out your days in this backward paradise. Spend your days farming, knowing you can't truly survive without warp-capable ships and the protection of the Federation, and die of the common cold. It would be your choice. Or do you feel like you were meant for something better? Something special?
Down on your recruiting quota for the month? Jim drawled.
Things have changed, and not for the better in my opinion, Pike conceded. You could be an officer in 4 years, your own ship in 8. And be like my parents. I'm daring you to do better, Pike shot back. Jim was silent, the affronted wind apparently taken out of his sails. He changed tactics. Why did you send Spock here? Spock has an interest in geology and needs more field instruction experience before his commission at the Academy. Jim snorted. Bullshit. Only partly. Did it work? Pike waited for a beat, realization dawning.
I see now.
You didn't mention this development in your field report, Lieutenant, the captain commented archly. It's none of your business, Jim said, but Spock knew that was only partially true.
You don't need to convince me, Jim, Pike empathized.
Unfortunately, it doesn't change my primary purpose for being here, which was not to catch up with you. Lieutenant Spock, you've been reassigned.
Captain?
Jim whipped his head around, staring at Spock in alarm. As I said, Jim, things have changed. Upper Brass is moving the commission of the Enterprise up 2 full years. I need my future first officer on Earth now.
I understand, Captain, Spock said, relying on his training before he could process the tangle of emotions within his mind.
I would need several days to return and process my lab. I am afraid we have precious little time, thanks to this damnable planet's atmosphere. You are to report to the Châtelet tonight with me, and we will send a team to collect your laboratory equipment in the spring.
Pike leaned back in his chair. If you know a better solution, please inform me.
Jim stood outside, obviously cold and shivering, facing the setting first sun, hands in his pockets. They stood that way for many silent minutes.
I feel like I've lied to you, Jim finally admitted. The orders are written. It's time for you to march out. And here I am, not ready.
He turned, his eyes bright with emotion.
What do you want me to do?
Spock shook his head. He had already planned on taking Jim to meet his parents, to travel to the deserts of Shikar, to bond them as Satelsu at the appointed place and paint his brow with oils. If he was being honest, he had a great many plans, but now only one desire.
I want you to make your choice freely, unencumbered by pressure. I would never ask you to decide now, regardless of the promises we had made each other. It would not be your true choice, Jim.
You have never lied to me. Neither of us was prepared for Captain Pike's orders, Spock observed, well aware that his voice was covering the emotional pain he was only just now beginning to unravel. Jim's face remained stony, but he leaned toward Spock, still shivering in the wind.
If Pike's trying to force my hand and join up, this is the worst play possible. I can't just leave today, Spock. I could never return. Bone needs me still, and I need...
He threw up his hands in frustration. time, Spock finished. Jim, you do not need to make a choice today, and I have declared my willingness to help secure you a civilian position, or to leave upon the end of my commission, and I will. You are leaving today, he mourned. Spock felt an echoing pang of regret and helplessness. I leave Red, but I am not leaving you. He offered a gloved hand, which Jim clasped immediately. I will have a great deal of personal time saved. In the spring, I am certain I can join the team on Red to retrieve my laboratory. I am not leaving you either, Jim said, squeezing Spock's hand as if willing resolve into it. I'll be ready. Soon. The news spread throughout the camp, and before midday, Spock was overrun with colonists expressing their regret over his hasty departure and wishing him good fortune and a pleasant journey to Earth. Zipporah Sulu in particular sought him out, carrying a rucksack. You can have my ecology project, since you don't have any minerals to take with you, she explained. Spock knelt, accepting the bag of samples she had collected from their journey to the salt marshes. That is exceptionally selfless, Miss Sulu. I accept with deep gratitude. Also, there's no teacher, so no one will grade it, she added helpfully. Nonetheless, it should not deter you from honing your mind as a scientist, he could not help but admonish. Zippy nodded, waving a sad goodbye. Bones found him next. Jim explained. He said quietly, I'm not going to say I like it, but I understand. I regret the situation, Spock said mechanically for the 20th time today. Oh, cheer up, Spock, Bones said nonsensically. I knew long before either of you came moon-eyed into my door asking to court that you were made for each other. Spock blinked, unsure of how to respond to the surprising revelation. And I knew what kind of life Jim would be living if he hitched it to your ship. He's far more suited to it than life dirt side, even now. And I know Jim, and once he's set in his mind, he doesn't give up. We'll see you in the spring, then. Live long and prosper, Lieutenant. Bones turned without another word, leaving Spock and Jim alone for the first time since Jim's decision. I will come back, Spock promised. Jim nodded, a stiff smile on his face. In the spring. The weather will be better, and you know the way, even if you crash land again. I will write, although you are unlikely to receive it before I arrive in the spring. You know I know how to operate your laboratory equipment, including your tiny comm system. Spock raised an eyebrow, knowing it would amuse Jim. Then you will write. Jim nodded. Every day. And then I will return, and you will give me your answer. Yes, I will be ready. Spock arrived with nothing but the clothes he was wearing, his satchel, and a precious rucksack of minerals. Captain Pike did not comment on the lack of Jim at his side. The shuttle A will be docking at Deep Space 2 for repairs, Pike explained when the shuttle docked. From there, we report to headquarters. I've recommended you for promotion to Lieutenant Commander. Understood, Captain. Excellent. Dismissed. Spock turned to head to his assigned quarters. And Lieutenant? Yes, sir. As Captain, sometimes it means you can't say you're sorry. You make the best decisions you can. They affect every member of your crew, knowing they laid down their life on your word, and you must live with the outcome. But for what very little it is worth, I am sorry. Spock nodded, taking his leave and walking down the almost deserted corridors to his quarters. He set his bag at the foot of the bunk, removed his shoes, and laid in the bottom bunk. He looked up out of muscle memory over the long months, refusing to acknowledge he had looked for what had been the last thing he saw before he closed his eyes these past months, a messy carved message letting the universe know Jim Kirk existed. 2 days later, there was a hail at his laboratory door. An unannounced visitor, especially at a particularly delicate stage of his sampling, was most unwelcome. He ignored it, but a second hail came. Come in, he instructed, eyes busy studying the screen for patterns to reveal themselves. Hello. Spock looked up, dumbfounded.
unable to comprehend how Jim could possibly have materialized on the space station. He could not attempt to cobble together a single hypothesis. Jim was still dressed in his clothes from yesterday, pressed white shirt and dirty brown boots, freckled from years of sun exposure. He looked as foreign on a spaceship as Spock did on Red. Spock was certain he had never seen anything so fascinating.
"You are here."
Jim smiled. "Very accurate observation, teacher."
"Why?"
"You said it was my choice," Jim said, his voice thick, hands steady at his side, but the sharp tick to his grin belying his uncertainty. "You said it like I had a choice." Spock frowned, still uncertain and trying to understand the parameters of the situation. "I would never..." "No," Jim said softly, holding out a hand. "You would never break that promise to me. As soon as you left, I knew I made a mistake." "It was never a choice, then. I'd already made it, you see. Bones helped me board the first freighter headed to Deep Space Two. It just took a while to catch up with you. I looked up at the stars and realized what I was meant to be chasing up there." Spock placed his hand in Jim's, relishing the gentle warmth that chased up his fingers. Jim stuck his hand deep within a pocket and pulled out a length of cloth, burnished and worn. "Bones gave it to me. Told me to make an honest man of you before too long," he whispered. Spock watched Jim finger the cloth, threadbare and precious. Spock turned and plucked a bag off of his desk, unopened, but he had not the heart to store it away when he arrived. He dumped out the contents into Jim's palm, the demotite gem he had bought on trading day, and covered it with his own. "This is the weight of the burdens and joys we bear, and together we will carry," Spock said over their joined hands. The memory of the words intoned at the Harvest Festival fire is still fresh in his memory. Jim squeezed his captured hand in acceptance and clumsily wrapped the red ribbon around their joined hands with the other. "This is the tie of marriage, family, and community," Jim continued. "It will support us together all our days. As we cannot drop the stone, we cannot forsake each other, nor the work we share, without rejecting the most fundamental bonds that brought us here. I accept these bonds and pledge to honor you in all things." Spock reached out to Jim, who stepped neatly into his arms, their bound hands between them. He looked down into Jim's eyes, uncertain of what he was looking for in the man, but knew when he found it. Jim chose Spock. Spock led him into the mess hall, only half filled with crew and visitors, only a few eyeing them with curiosity. He found an unoccupied synthesizer and gestured for Jim to go first. Jim stood facing the wall, uncertain. "I remember them," Jim said. "The energy they needed was too great to have in a home or average starship when I was a kid." "This starbase can support its use, but Starfleet will likely have them installed in every ship in the next 7 years." Jim looked up, curiosity written across his face. Spock ordered Enwoa sprouts, allowing Jim to place his order. 1 cheeseburger, medium well, with French fries. They found a quiet table shielded by hydroponic ferns. Jim chewed and swallowed his first bite. "This tastes like crap," he pronounced, regret written across his face. "The bread is weird, sweet," Jim said, poking at it. "I think Red changed my taste buds." "Most crew report that synthetic food fails to replicate the chemical complexities of the acids and salts inherent to their home planet." Jim ate the French fries, declaring them adequate, and eyed the other crew. "What if I said I might be interested in Starfleet?" "Captain Pike's offer to enroll at the Academy has not been rescinded." "How many years until you take your commission on the Enterprise?"
3.
"And how long before I could be an officer?"
4 years.
"I'll do it in 3. The end. Author's note. The end. Gentle readers, I've really enjoyed sharing this story with you. It has been fun and exciting to hear that many of you appreciate this strange little AU, bucolic setting, and gentle manners. I appreciate the kudos, comments, and encouragement. Thank you for being a reader. Best wishes, good fortune, and live long and prosper. Walk and talk. Reader's note. Hello, everybody. This is 15. I just wanted to let you know that I am so grateful that you downloaded this story or streamed it and listened to every chapter. That means a lot to me. If you enjoyed the podfic, please leave a kudos or a comment. And if you enjoyed the story, please, please, please be sure to go to the original story page. That link can be found on the landing page for this podfic. And leave some love for Walk and Talk on Red. Leave them a kudos and a comment. Tell them that you like the story. I think this story is vastly underrated, and I would really love to see it get more love. Okay, everyone. I hope you have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever you got going on. And I'll see you in the next one. Bye.